The Black Shore Arts Hour.
And welcome to another episode of the Black Shore Arts Hour. I'm Ellie and I'm here with Matt Boothman.
It's me, Matt Boothman. I wasn't sure whether you were queuing me up to introduce myself or not.
Hey, I'm always going to be your hype man. So Matt and I are united once more to talk to you about arts stuff. We did do that last time, but just from different zones.
Yeah, thank you for crossing space and time to rescue me from where I was stuck.
That's okay. I wore my best cape to do so. So coming up today, we're going to be reviewing two films.
Yep.
Dos, as the Spanish say.
Yeah. Are we going to say what they are, or are we going to leave that as a surprise? Oh,
let's leave that as a surprise for like in 10 seconds time. We're also going to be chatting a bit more about what's on offer alongside our production of The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell. So stay tuned if you like theatre and things connected to theatre. But now we're doing things that are film. So we're going to do this.
The Matt Boothman film review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
What are you reviewing for us today, Matt Boothman?
So, I said I was going to do Annihilation.
Yes, which makes it sound like you're about to blow everybody up.
No, yes, I'm going to do some Annihilation.
It's going to do one on you.
And I am going to do Annihilation.
Yes, good.
But I thought it would be interesting to talk about it alongside Tomb Raider.
Agree.
Because I saw them both the same week, and I think there are some interesting parallels.
Oh, do
it's
you?
It's worth drawing a line between the two of them.
I'm intrigued, because I've seen both films also. In fact, I watched Annihilation today in anticipation.
I watched it last night.
Oh, good. Within the same 24 hours. We're both so fresh from it. Great. Well, I'm looking forward to this.
Awesome. So that what made me want to talk about them at the same time is I saw them both in the same week, but also they're both movies about a woman who goes to a scary wilderness to try to save a man who is important to her.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a pretty obvious parallel that I haven't thought of.
who went there first and who then come back changed.
Yes.
From that place. And I think the reason it's kind of a revealing comparison is I don't think I liked Tomb Raider, and so I just want to preface with that, and I think it doesn't suffer from the usual curse of movies based on video games being total tripe,
which is often the case.
It is often the case, but I don't think it suffers. I think Tomb Raider suffers in this comparison that I am drawing.
Okay.
Because while they are both women who go on the... So Lara Croft in Tomb Raider, played by Alicia Vikander, Lena, the biologist in Annihilation, played by Natalie Portman, they are both motivated to go somewhere scary and outside their comfort zone because they're trying to rescue a man who is important in their life.
Yeah.
Lara's father, played by Dominic West.
Yeah.
Lena's husband, played by Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
But where Tomb Raider falls down is it defines all of the skills that make Lara the right woman for the job in relation to her dad.
Right.
So it's strongly implied kind of throughout the movie that like the reason she is brave and stubborn and determined and good at bows and arrows and all of these things that make her like the right person to do this are because she's a Croft. She is her father's daughter.
They're all inherited traits.
Yeah, like he taught her everything she knows.
Right.
Whereas all of the things that make Lena, Natalie Portman's character, the right person to go into the scary place and find out what happened to her husband are things that she's pursued on her own.
Yeah.
So the two of them are both... So they're both military people, and that is how they met. But she isn't... good at military stuff and shooting guns because he was that
follow him into the army.
No, she met him there,
right.
And the other thing that makes her the right person to do this is that she is a biologist, and that's her own passion that gets her through all of that. The other contrast is that barring Kristen Scott Thomas, who sort of bookends Tomb Raider, she shows up in the early scenes and the ending scenes. There are basically no other women in Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
So it is this exceptional woman trope, where the only way the movie knows to tell you this woman is competent and good at what she does is to not have any other women in it.
Eradicate all of the women.
Yeah. It's right. Like, this one is special. You've got to focus on this one. Look how good she is compared to the men.
Yeah.
But no other women in the whole film.
Right.
Whereas practically the entire supporting cast of Annihilation is women. And once you get past a certain point in the film, it's practically just these five scientist, explorer, soldier women going into the scary place.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the, I think, where the comparison probably ends. But I thought it was kind of revealing to talk about them in those terms.
I feel like a big part of those differences are going to be down to things like the steer from the producers, because they both have very different kind of production routes, don't they? In terms of, you know, Tomb Raider is this big commercial blockbuster out in all the cinemas, whereas Annihilation is a big film, but it's gone pretty much straight to Netflix, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. And I wonder whether it's also to do with the legacy of the source material that they're based on. So,
yeah.
The Tomb Raider games, or at least kind of... So there are many Tomb Raider games, and in their kind of the earlier iterations that made the character famous, it was the case that Lara Croft was basically the one competent woman
in all the world.
Everybody else that you met was like variations on a thug with a gun or a dog or
so. It's in a weird way, it's sort of going, well, it's feminist because it's one woman against a world of men.
Kind of.
But that's what they're saying.
I think...
Not in the original games.
Not in the original games. In the more recent... So the two more recent games, after they sort of relaunched the character...
Yeah.
On which this film is based. It's very clearly based on the last but one Tomb Raider game.
Okay.
Which was a new origin for the character.
Right.
Rather than a kind of next one in the series.
I was going to say, in the original... like the Angelina Jolie films, isn't her dad very much dead?
Yeah.
Right.
I think he probably is in most of the games as well.
Right.
Certainly in those ones. I really rate that last but one game, just called Tomb Raider because it was a reboot.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot. I think it's got some good story stuff going on with it. Rihanna Pratchett has a story credit on it, who is excellent at that kind of thing. And it didn't fall into all those pitfalls of... that game had a very strong supporting cast, many of whom were women. It gave Lara friends and like a support system rather than being this lone wolf character.
And is that the game that this film is based on?
That is the film this game is based on.
And yet they just chose to take out all of the women.
Yes, they just took everybody out apart from her.
Pounds.
Yeah.
So in the game, do the other women of the game exist before she goes on her adventure, or do they exist throughout?
They come with her. They are her crew that she brought. So this is the other thing with it, is that in the game, it's her expedition and it's her theory that she's trying to prove about this lost island.
Rather than the lone wolf thing.
Rather than, I have to go to this lost island because I need to prove that my dad wasn't insane and also isn't dead.
Yeah.
So it takes away a lot of her drive and her own agency by erasing. It simplifies, and obviously the movie needs to simplify because the game has a good 60 hours to tell the story.
Sure.
And so you lose a lot of the richness of the setting as well. So the game has all of this stuff where it's an island that many generations of people throughout the ages have been shipwrecked on and like tried to build these driftwood communities on. You meet lots of kind of interesting people and bits of interesting history, which makes sense for like an archaeologist hero.
Yeah.
You don't really get any of that in the movie.
No, it's very much wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. This is completely unoccupied apart from this one group of baddies who you're going to fight now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the last hour is... I really feel like we're slamming it hard. I actually enjoyed it a lot in the cinema.
Yeah, and so did I.
It is undeniable that the last hour is the last crusade.
It is.
Right.
Which is a film I really enjoy. Yeah. So I enjoyed it, but oh my God, it's like they've just gone copy-paste.
Yeah, right down to like, you're going to go into this place and there will be these three trials you've read about that all have a trick to them.
Yeah.
And you have to get through them with your dad and the bad guy.
Yeah. And your history knowledge will save the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing that you're trying to get turns out to be deadly.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Hashtag spoilers. But I mean, it's not spoilers, is it? Like, that's just I think part of
it's predictable.
A big part of the reason I enjoyed the film is that it felt so familiar and comfortable.
Yeah,
because it's got all of those tropes of adventure, of, you know, the films you watch as a kid, the Indiana Jones type stuff. But at the same time, it's set in modern day, so it's quite indulgent in terms of, like, oh yeah, fantasy. Like, maybe I could be Lara Croft, maybe I could run that fast. But it is really predictable. Like, there's a, you know, no spoilers, but there's a big twist at the end that I clocked within the first 5 seconds of that character coming on screen at the beginning, because I was like, obviously, right? So, but I didn't get annoyed by that. I just felt a bit smug and like, oh, they aimed this at a different calibre of film watcher than I.
And what it gets right, it does really get right. Like, I think it really zeroes in on some of the sequences from the game that were thrilling and manages to translate those well to the cinema. Like, and it's when it's her alone against the elements, like using her wits, I think it really comes to life. Like, there is a sequence where she gets thrown in a river and has to stop herself going over a waterfall. And it's one of those sequences where just, like, everything keeps going wrong. I think the only line in the whole sequence is her going, really?
Yeah.
Just as the next thing cascades to go wrong.
I really enjoyed that.
I thought that sequence was really well done. It fixes, actually, some of the issues that the game it's based on had. Like, I think... so this is the origin story for a character who is basically an aristocrat who then becomes like a world roving Indiana Jones type, but with more murder.
Yeah.
And I think the movie handles the first time she has to kill someone a lot better than the game does.
Oh, it's intense, guys.
It's really intense. And it makes some choices about, like, how she has to do the deed that seem to make a lot more sense in the moment.
It makes it like a really meaningful character development moment. It's not just a flash in the pan. Oh, we kill people now. It's like, I think it was really unexpected, actually. And I think that kind of goes some way towards making up for the slightly more two-dimensional aspects of her character, like the, oh, well, your dad taught you how to shoot a bow and arrow, so that's where you got that from. Mm-hmm. I think now you've mentioned it, a line came straight to my head in the film where she's talking to her dad, and he's like, oh, where did you go? Oxford, Cambridge? And she's like, oh, I didn't go to university. And in my head, it wasn't about whether she went to university or not. It was basically her being like, oh, well, I haven't accomplished anything, Daddy. I'm not a real girl after all. there weren't really a lot of kind of background on her and actually what she likes, dislikes, how she spends her time. Does she have friends? There's not really a lot of setup for her life.
And given that, I think Alicia Vikander does a really good job of just a few little quirks of her performance that really give you kind of the arrogance that the character has.
Yeah.
That she is very cocksure, and you get that right from the beginning. And that kind of keeps going through. And it makes it more believable that she does these very daring things.
Yeah, and takes insane risks.
Yeah.
Because she's just like, I can do that. That's fine.
I think the only other thing to say really about it is one of the things that makes it notable is the writer credit, which is someone called Geneva Robertson Dworet, who is notable to me from my IMDb delving only because her only other significant writing credit is for the upcoming Captain Marvel movie, which will star Brie Larson, which will be the Marvel Universe's first female-helmed superhero movie. So I don't know that it necessarily fills me with huge hopes for the script of that movie.
No.
But I did think the dialogue was fine.
Yes. Yeah.
So I hope that the problems that I have with how the characters handle that kind of thing are down to, like you said, down to studio notes.
Yeah.
Rather than necessarily that being this writer's vision.
Yes. Well, we'll have to wait and find out, I guess.
We will. So then to talk a little bit about Annihilation, if we may. So this is written and directed by Alex Garland, who also did, I think his most recent one was Ex Machina, also with Alicia Vikander in it.
I think Do you mean Natalie Portman?
No, I do mean
Alicia Vikander in it?
In Ex Machina, yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Okay, neither have I.
But good. We shan't talk about that one then.
No, let's not. I have seen some of his other things. This is a movie with a lot of DNA from The Thing, I think.
Yeah.
John Carpenter's The Thing, but greener instead of white and snowy. So it's a kind of a monster flick at its heart, but with this focus on... the focus is less on people v. the monsters or people v. the environment and more on what happens to psychologically to a group of isolated people when put in that situation with scary things and with an unknown environment and with weird stuff happening to them, and with a very strong strand of body horror running through the whole thing. I think it really nails a tone of grotesque and repulsive, yet beautiful and mesmerising.
Yeah, I agree. There are some really gross moments.
Super gross, but the whole thing is like beautiful as well. Like, yeah, you can't take.
There's
your
a lot
eyes
of shiny, shiny.
Yeah. The point is there is this weird area of the world that has become known as the Shimmer, which the government is covering up, where weird stuff seems to be happening. It's getting bigger. They keep sending teams of soldiers in and none of them ever come back.
So they just keep going.
And they're getting worried.
Keep sending people.
They keep sending people in and nobody ever comes back and nobody's sure whether they're being killed by something in there or whether they're going mad and killing each other.
Yeah.
And once you get inside, everything, like the whole colour palette and like the way the like the lens through which the movie is shot changes, and you get this rainbow sheen across everything, just in all the lens flare off the
you
back
can
of the shot.
See why they're calling it the Shimmer.
Yeah. And very clearly weird things are going on with the plant and animal life, plants in the shape of people and animals
really
with plant features and things with elements that seem to be coming in from other creatures.
Yeah,
that,
animals with other animal elements.
Yeah.
But
where everything just seems to be going, combining and recombining and reflecting in this kind of funhouse mirror of life.
Yeah, it's like a grotesque wonderland.
Yeah. I really liked the soundtrack is this odd mixture of nice pastoral guitar.
Yeah.
That you would expect to see in like a like a Coen Brothers Road movie or something.
Yeah.
And then these really disturbing electronic moans and groans when stuff gets particularly strange.
Yeah, moans and groans is a good way to put it.
So it's about this reflection, refraction, seeing other things and seeing yourself through this distorted lens, and whether is the distorted reflection you? Are you becoming the distorted reflection? It has a lot to say about people's tendency towards self-destruction and big questions about whether that is something that is coded into life at the genetic level, that we're all in one way or another heading towards our own annihilation. It really reminded me in the last about 20 minutes of another movie written by Alex Garland, which I really like, which seems to which wasn't as big a hit as some people were hoping and seems to have big detractors, which is Sunshine, directed by Danny Boyle with Cillian Murphy in it, in that it has this quite almost transcendental moments at the ending of something that is somebody taking a huge plunge and a sense of absolutely everything changing and everything going a bit psychedelic and strange, which I really enjoyed. I think it's a... I feel honestly cheated that I haven't... You alluded earlier to the fact that it's been released as a Netflix original.
Yeah.
Given... I don't know whether you felt this as well. Given the subtlety of some of the details and things like people staring at parts of themselves and seeming to see minute changes.
Yeah.
And like tiny changes in people's eyes or people's skin or people's fingerprints.
Yeah, fingerprints.
I feel horribly cheated that I don't get to see this on a giant screen.
Yeah.
I want to see this in like IMAX, like the sharpest possible projection I can.
Because it's all about, they keep saying, oh, it's a trick of the light. It's your eyes playing tricks on you. And when you're watching it on a smaller screen at home, it's a bit it's like, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what they showed us on the film because it was so tiny.
Yeah, like if you're going to watch this, I really recommend like trying to give yourself a cinema experience with it. Like
turn the lights off.
Turn your phone off.
Get really close to the screen.
Maybe.
Like, turn the brightness right up.
Like really give it your attention and think of it as like a new movie release rather than just like coasting through Netflix for something fun to watch.
I don't know if that was always the plan for it to be a Netflix job.
I don't think it was. I think that was just the deal that they ended up getting.
Right.
I don't know what... I wonder if it's to the decision process.
I wonder if it's a sign of things to come, whether sort of big blockbuster style... Because, I mean, it is blockbuster style. Films like that will as a sort of, you know, run-of-the-mill thing, often end up going to Netflix rather than a cinema release.
I don't know. I've seen speculation that it's because it's a thoughtful, original piece of science fiction... And
that it's too highbrow literary.
Yeah, and that, you know, the studio or the distributors or the producers or whoever it is that makes these decisions has made an assumption that audiences won't go for it in the cinema, and so this is the best option. I've seen similar speculation that decision might have been driven by the fact that it is a majority female cast.
Yeah.
People won't go for new sci-fi that isn't a franchise. Ooh, they definitely won't go for it if it's all ladies. It seems to be the decision process that everybody is assuming.
There's also rumours about it being due to clashes between producers and Paramount, the film company. And so they went to Netflix. Obviously that's just a rumour. Could be a combination of the above.
Yeah, we've seen before with these like straight to small screen releasing things that if it gets a big enough audience, it may find itself in cinemas later.
Yeah.
If people think that it'll bring audiences in.
Yeah, that's true.
So hopefully. Everybody, like, just watch it a good 5 or 6 times. And hopefully they'll go, oh, the numbers have pinged. They're going up.
So, like,
put it on
the
big screen.
Watch it once or twice properly and then just have it running in the background while you're doing, like, your housework and stuff.
Yeah. Cheat the system. worth just doing a quick shout out to the author of the original book, Jeff Vandermeer, as well. Just wanted to make sure that he was named.
Yeah. Well done, mate.
Yeah, it's actually the book is the first of a trilogy, the Southern Reach trilogy. I've not read, but certainly have some of the best cover design I've seen in recent years.
Nice.
So I will be picking those up.
And is that a book that's been written recently, or is it an old one?
Last 5 years, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's relatively recent.
So I can always find it interesting, kind of the differences between sort of sci-fi being written now and sci-fi that was written, you know, sort of 50 years ago, and the different ideas of the future that you get.
The golden age, like supposedly bankable old stuff, because like everybody's read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, as opposed to the interesting stuff that's being written now that says something about now.
Yeah, well, and you know, now is a time where we're coming through the digital age and where technology advances have come on so much further in the last, you know, 20 years than they ever have in the hundreds of years before, that people can have the imagination to see what could be next. I find that absolutely intriguing because I kind of feel like, well, you know, 50, 60 years ago, you could have thought of all kinds of crazy stuff, whereas now you say a crazy thing and then you're like, nah, it's not that crazy, it's probably already been done. A robot that can predict the future, yeah, it's probably happening right now.
We got an octopus that can predict the football results.
Absolutely.
That's weirder by far.
And nothing to do with technology.
I have seen, actually, it's worth, if you're interested in that sort of thing, looking at Charles Stross's blog, because he has written quite extensively, because he is an author who has made a name writing quite, like, up-to-the-minute near-future science fiction.
Okay.
And he's written extensively in the last couple of years about the fact that he is having to now write very far-future stuff because the current events are just too weird and too unpredictable to write like something that feels like it could happen in the next 5 years.
Right.
Because by the time he finishes writing it and it gets through the publishing cycle,
it's actually happened.
It's either actually happened or everything has changed so much, like all the founding assumptions of the world have shifted so far that it doesn't feel plausible anymore.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you started writing a book while Obama was still in office, before the campaigns had been announced, and then finish it when Trump's in seat, then you're like, oh, this book.
Well, he specifically writes books about a fictional UK government department, and the UK government is unrecognisable as to like the way it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, well, in real life, yes, yes. Oh, brilliant. Well, the times we live in, eh?
Yeah.
Crikey. So, what would you recommend that people see one or both of those films? Like, what's your overall feeling?
Annihilation if you're only going to watch one.
Yeah.
But if you were going to avoid Tomb Raider because you were like, well, it's a movie based on a game, therefore it will be terrible.
Yeah.
It's actually not. It's a decent, like, March blockbuster.
Yeah. And I liked the first round, the Angelina Jolie round of Tomb Raider films, and I also enjoyed these. I saw them as quite different, to be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't really... Not that I was as attached to Angelina Jolie's version that I was like, no, anything else will be an injustice, it'll be a disgrace upon her name.
Well, I think the difference is reflective of the fact that the Angelina Jolie ones were based on that generation of the Tomb Raider games.
And this
one is based on the rebooted set of games, which have a bit of a different feel to them.
Yeah.
A bit of a different take on the character.
I mean, I understand, for example, that their bosoms are a different shape this time around.
Which is they've got better graphics to work with now. So it's not like
triangle or square.
It's not like big triangle or nothing.
Good to know. Okay, well, on that note, I'm going to very briefly talk to you about a pretty huge theatre show that I've been seeing. It's Hamilton.
The hugest theatre show.
Only the biggest of theatre shows. So I saw it this week with Blackshaw regular Vicky Weston.
Can I ask how long the time lapse was between seeing it this week and getting the ticket?
Oh, God. I mean, Vicky got it as soon as they were released. Oh, over a year, I think. as soon as they went on sale... for the UK dates, Vicky booked them, and she's actually going to see it 3 times.
Yes, so I've heard.
So I was one of 3. Honoured I was. And we were literally as far back as you can get in that theatre. We were like back row of the gods. But the view was fantastic. I mean, because they've completely redone that theatre, there's not really a restricted view seat in the house, I don't think. I mean, technically there might be, but
I'm glad the redo was worth it, because it did actually delay the first dates, didn't
it? By 2 weeks, yeah. Which is pretty awful for people who had booked flights and things to come to see it. But that aside, my experience was excellent. Yes, the theatre's... It doesn't look like a new theatre. They've done it up in the traditional proscenium arch, all the fancy Art Deco-y, blah, blah, blah. But the difference is that they've got lots of toilets.
What?
So many toilets. I mean, I actually went to the toilet in the interval because I was confident that I would get through the queue before we were called back in. So it was nice to have some mod cons in that sense. And as I say, like, they didn't have to have, you know, a lot of older theatres. You have a lot of supporting pillars running right across the stage view for the higher realms of seats, and you don't have that problem. It's a completely open vista, so it was a great view of the stage. And I won't go into, you know, huge amounts of details about the show. I think the soundtrack's fantastic. I'd only listened to like bits of it beforehand because I didn't want to spoil the narrative for myself, and I didn't really know the historical narrative that well because it's American history.
I was going to say, it's a bit of a different experience to sort of the original audiences watching over here, where we're a bit less steeped in it.
Yeah, although I hadn't really clocked the fact that it's kind of the telling of an untold story, because the Americans all know about the way in which Hamilton died, but they don't really get taught about his life and what he actually did. They sort of know, oh, he's sort of involved in politics, and then there was this death that everyone knows about. But for me, I was coming to it completely cold, not knowing really who he was or what was going on. But it was really fantastic. The way that the songs are put together is amazing. It spans so many different kind of genres of music, and all the performances were incredible. Like, even the chorus members were so kind of so refined in their performance that they would draw the eye. So it's not often that you're watching a stage full of actors and you're not looking at the lead because there's a really great dancer in the back row. Like, it was a really great show, and the excitement was palpable. Like, the audience are just clearly so into it because it's hard to get tickets, so if you're there, you want to be there.
Is it a bit of a concert vibe?
Yeah, it kind of is. Like, obviously there was some people who knew it quite well, and then a certain character would come on and they'd be like, "Woo, yeah!" And I'd be like, "Very good." And you know, after certain numbers that were done particularly well or that were particular favourites, the clapping and the whooping would go on for quite a long time. If you can get a ticket at an affordable price,
yeah,
go and see it.
Did it feel subversive? Because there's a sort of one of the reason, well, like, obviously it made a stir because it's an amazing show.
Yeah.
But like the headline grabbing thing that was easy for the press to latch onto when it first started playing was the fact that it is portrayals of the founding fathers of modern America played by people who look more like the people that those founding fathers would have enslaved or or stomped all over in their colonialist ways.
Yeah, well, in America, I understand they had an all black cast. In the UK, they've gone with colourblind casting, so it's a total mix of ethnicities.
Okay, I didn't realise they'd made that change yet.
Really interesting. I don't know whether it's got to do with the pool of actors in the UK, the different ethnicities in the UK's population. I have no idea why they would have made that slightly different decision, or if it's, you know, obviously in America they're making a real political point about having an all-black cast, and in the UK obviously there's still a myriad of racial issues going on, but I think they're very different to those that are going on in the US. So I don't know whether they felt that they were motivated by that to make a different statement.
Yeah. And I guess that the racial issues we have here are less easily addressable by recasting the American founding fathers. It just feels like less of a direct point.
Yeah, it doesn't mean much to us. We're like, sure, whatever. I don't know who these guys are. It was really cool because it just meant that everyone was in it because they were the best person for that role. And that's the dream, isn't it? For watching theatre, to be like, I am watching this person being brilliant in this role because they were the best of the best of the best of the best. It didn't matter what they looked like. And that goes for like body shape as well. There was a real lovely range of all kinds of appearance. And it doesn't make a difference. Like, at no point is anyone questioning the historical accuracy. At no point is anyone questioning, oh, well, these sisters are supposed to be sisters, but they're all slightly different colours. Like, that's not how it works. Because I think as well of the stylized way in which it's performed, you can make those choices without them, you know, making people think about it. And it was really cool that, I mean, again, I'm not going to go into spoiler territory, but it's a strip back set. It's fun lighting. The orchestra are awesome. It really feels like an ensemble piece that is working with the source material, and it's no frills on top of it, which is really nice. And as I say, the excitement levels are kind of through the roof. And I recorded a little bit of Vicky and I having a chat at the interval. So I'm just going to play that to you now so you can get a sense of how we felt.
A review of a thing. It's time for somebody's opinion.
So Vicky and I are queuing for the ladies in the interval of Hamilton. Vicky, how are you feeling?
Oh my God, I'm so excited. I've been basically on the verge of excited tears for the entire first half, which was approximately, what, like an hour and 30 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And Vicky's been very restrained in that she's been mouthing but not singing along, which I'm relieved about.
Apart from the bit where King George did invite us to join in, and then I did kind of go for it.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Yeah.
I've come in knowing literally nothing and not having listened to the songs before, and it's just so much fun and so tight. We were just saying the vocals are insane.
and they have so much work to do because they are switching from like epic musical number to hip hop jams again all of the time.
Yeah, and there's one character, Angelica, who has a particular bit where she just does like the world's fastest, longest, most intricate rap, and then immediately, no intake of breath, goes into this big booming belting song. Yeah, kind of overwhelming.
It is overwhelmingly brilliant. Staging is great. Yes. Lighting, really good use of lighting, yes. So they don't have to have too much on stage.
The lighting has a sense of humour.
It does have a sense of humour. King George is the best.
Yes, King George is very amusing. I don't feel too abused as a British person, I think it's despite the fact that we're the enemy here.
I think a British audience kind of enjoys being a bit abused by the audience, right?
Yeah. So we've approached Leeds now, so we're going to sign off.
The Blackshaw Arts Hour.
That's a tasty air treat.
So there you go. We were quite excited.
Lighting with a sense of humour. Mm-hmm. I like that idea.
Yeah. I'm pleased with that phrasing that I came up with on the spot. So you can hear how much fun we had.
It sounds like just an amazing experience. Like, how are you going to follow that? What are you seeing next?
Well, I'm actually seeing two shows soonly. Coming up, Lee. I'm going to be seeing two very different shows. So the first one is called Good Girl, and it is written and performed by Naomi Sheldon, who we actually went to university with at Royal Holloway. But she...
Lovely alert. Lovely alert.
darling. Just clang, dropping the name. She took it up to Edinburgh and had insane reviews and some really top feminist famos come and see it and say how wonderful it was. So I'm just overexcited and thrilled for her and for seeing the show. So I will let you know all about that. It's currently running at the Trafalgar Studios. So if you want to go and see it, it's actually on until the end of March. So go to the Trafalgar Studios website and check it out and book ticks if you fancy. It's only an hour long. It's apparently very funny. And it's a lot about being a lady. So if you're interested in ladies or you're a lady, then you should. Well, if you're just a person, if you're a person in the modern world, go and see it.
Yeah, you don't have to be a lady. Have some empathy. Come on.
Yeah, people. I'm looking at you, people. Also, the other show I'm seeing is 42nd Street.
Yay.
Which Matt's informed me has got a new guest star. It's Lulu.
Is she going to do some tap dancing?
I'm so excited. So I chose 42nd Street because I and a group of other theatre friends just wanted to go and see something kind of a bit light and, dare I say it, trashy. you know, don't really have to engage the brain. Just lots of pretty colours and dancing. And I really love tap dancing. So... And I really love any kind of dancing where it's lots of people all synchronised.
Oh, yeah.
I find it very soothing. So I'm going to be going to see that and sort of hypnotising myself into relaxation, I think. But I've also heard it's good. I've heard that from people. So, and that's it's good as well because there's lots of affordable tickets for that show on the internet.
Very important.
Yeah, because often big West End shows, it's hard to justify the amount and sometimes just hard to afford it at all. But yeah,
especially if the attitude you're taking to it is it's a bit fluff. Trash.
Yeah.
You don't want to pay top dollar for that.
I referred to it as junk food theatre earlier, which is a bit naughty. I mean, I don't get me wrong, a lot of work goes into those huge productions, but it's quite different than going to see, you know, a gritty drama in a found space, which is usually more my jam. So those are the two shows that I'm going to see. What are you going to see in the varying future?
I've got a couple. I'm seeing a few more national things. So
The Nash,
darling. National Theatre down on the South Bank. So I'm seeing The Great Wave, which is a new play based on a true story, which is part of like the current season that is just working its way out.
Yeah,
this is about two sisters in Japan who were caught in a storm and one of them disappeared.
Oh,
And then I'm also booked for one of the shows in the. Just announced, or not just announced, but like the new season for which public non-member tickets just went
right,
on sale.
Sure.
Which is Polly Stenham's new version of Strindberg's Miss Julie.
Yeah.
What's
that about?
It's about a woman and her reputation and it getting
so
ruined.
Precious.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
But we'll see. It looks to be like a celeb-infused take on that that eternal story.
Yeah. What celebs are there in it? Do you know?
I don't know.
I might look it up.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So you're seeing two relatively highbrow things then, really.
Relatively. They're not in the Olivier.
Oh well. Why are you bothering?
They're in one of the littler spaces.
That's great. So it's Carrie Cracknell from The Deep Blue Sea. No, just directing.
Directing, yeah.
Ellie, come on. Vanessa Kirby.
Carrie Cracknell's Deep Blue Sea was very good.
Okay, well, that bodes well. Yes, it's Vanessa Kirby off of The Crown and Eric Kofi Abrafa from The Amen Corner. There's an Amen Corner in Tooting where I live.
There is. I believe the play is about it.
It's actually.
I think. I don't know.
Don't tease me out, baby.
It's one of the Amen Corner. I've never really looked it up, but it's one of those ones that you can, when you go to the National, you can play program bingo with it, because you can guarantee that at least one, maybe a couple of people in that programme will have the Amen Corner in their theatre biography.
Okay.
You're totally lying. Oh, it's not about that.
It's set in Harlem.
Ah, it's not about not the Tooting one, sorry. That's all right. It's about a different very cool neighbourhood.
Maybe they named it after the Tooting one. In Harlem, I mean.
Maybe. Lots of American things are named after UK things.
Yeah. So there you go. Well, that sounds like two quite different shows that you're going to see.
Yeah,
different to one another. Great. Well, we'll update you all when we've actually seen those with our eyes and put them into your ears. Right. So, away from other people's theatre and looking at Blackshaw's theatre, we've got, as you all know, The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell by Chris Buxey coming up in May.
Did I miss all Frankie Fightwell's other adventures?
You must have done. What were you doing?
Damn it.
It's a very popular series.
It's really hard to keep up with all the series these days.
Yes, I know. And I mean, it's not really aimed at you. It's a young people series.
Okay.
We're too old for this. It's going to be very exciting. It's a very silly, but also very poignant radio play. We're going to be doing live Foley again with the lovely Andrew Crane. He has told us he's going to be doing things to a watermelon, so you've all been warned. But alongside that production, we are going to be running a free writing workshop. Harder to say than you might think. And that is going to be for Wandsworth residents aged 16 and over. It's on Saturday the 12th of May, 2 to 4 at Putney Arts Theatre. And it's going to be all about the discipline of writing, creating narrative, writing specifically for radio. And we can also offer support for starting writing or for developing works in progress. And we're going to have some lovely Blackshaw folk in attendance. One of them will be Matt Boothman.
Hello.
He's done writing for us and not with us before. And we've also got a previous Showcase Award winner, Kat Roberts, and Chris Buxey himself, who done wrote The Final Adventure of Frankie Fightwell. So that we're going to be having lots of nice chats. It will be kind of moulded to the experience and aims of the workshop attendees.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd love to give some details about the sort of stuff that we're going to be doing and the kind of exercises to expect, but it really is going to be driven by once people sign up and tell us what they want out of it, we'll design it all based around that.
Yeah, so you don't need to have any previous experience to join the workshop. We just need to get an idea of what kind of writing you've either done or are interested in doing. And so it doesn't need to be necessarily for the stage. It could be writing for a novel. It could be other writing. Novels, plays, radio plays.
Yeah, film, TV.
Yeah, ooh, all the things. And it's going to be a lovely two-hour experience. And as I say, it's completely free because we're lucky enough to be supported by the Wandsworth Arts Grant.
Yeah, free, but ticketed. You do need to sign up.
Oh boy, howdy. We will be turning you away at the door if you ain't signed up, mate. That's what I'll say as well. It'll be really cringe. You can sign up.
That's right, we'll workshop that dialogue.
Yeah, okay, thanks. You can tell I'm not going to the writing workshop. You can apply and also find out a bit more information on our website. Just go to blackshawonline.com/blog.
Easy.
You looked really perturbed at the /blog.
I think you looked at me expectantly and I wasn't sure what I was supposed to fill in. I thought maybe there was another half to the URL.
Just guess.
That you expected me to supply.
No. Just blackshawonline.com/blog. We'll also be tweeting and Facebooking about it, and there'll be links in those. So if you don't already, do follow us on the social media. All of the information coming up at the end of the show. So I'm going to end by saying two things. Firstly, I'm going to ask you, Matt Boothman, do you know what you might be reviewing next time?
Film-wise? Yeah. No, not really.
No.
I'm definitely seeing the Big Fat Avengers film.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
My Big Fat Avengers film. Yeah.
My Big Fat Avengers film with all of the characters ever in it.
Yes.
I think that might be closer to the end of April, so there's probably a show or two in between now and then.
That's coming on the 20-something of April. Yeah, other shows coming up. It seems like there's a film called Ready Player One.
Oh, no, I'm not fancying that one.
No, it's about virtual reality and stuff. It's a Steven Spielberg, but I feel like it's not going to be great. There's that very strange-looking one called Isle of Dogs, which I've seen the trailer for.
I love dogs too, but what's the film called?
Have you been saving that one? That was really good. It's called Isle of Dogs.
I've not heard much about this. Sorry.
Okay, it's a sort of animated film with lots of famous voices in. There's like all the dogs become infected with some kind of virus, so they throw them all on an island. But then a young boy wants to find his dogs, so he goes to the island. It looks bizarre.
I'll probably either do that or the latest Nicolas Cage loses his stuff.
Yes. So, oh my goodness, what's it called? Mum and Dad or something? Yeah. And it's about Nicolas Cage.
It's about a weird situation. Is it a plague? Is it magic? All of the parents go mad and start trying to kill their children in serial killer type ways.
It's like a sort of tongue-in-cheek comedy horror type thing. And Nicolas Cage is in the trailer ripping up the cement floor of his garage, singing the Hokey Pokey.
It looks like he's gone full Cage.
Oh my goodness, he totally has. We should go and see that for sure. There's a couple of other interesting things coming up, like Love, Simon, which is right on the nose with the LGBTQ+ type stuff.
Yep.
Which is great to see that in mainstream film aimed at young people. Saying that, I haven't seen the film. Maybe they've completely boshed it wrong. I don't know.
It's not the buzz I'm hearing.
Oh,
thankfully.
Good. Ooh, positive buzz. And then there's Ghost Stories, which is based on a play.
Yeah, the Andy Nyman play that ran for quite some time off the West End here in London.
And I was always too scared to go and see it, which I regret.
That was kind of the buzz around that. I can't remember if it is their audience interaction or something like that. There's something about it that they really played up how much of a scare it is.
They had so many warnings, like if you're pregnant, if you've got a heart issue, if you're a bit scaredy, don't go. So yeah, I kind of regret that now. There's also another horror film. We were just saying a bit of an odd time for horrors to be coming out, but A Quiet Place, which is Emily Blunt and her husband John Krasinski. And from the trailers, it seems the premise is you've got to be real quiet or something real bad happens.
It's another kind of critter movie. But the things will get you if you make a noise.
Yeah, and there's children in it.
So it might be quite interesting to see, it might end up being a movie that is very visual and not really told through dialogue too much, which could be interesting.
Yeah. So
it's a good gimmick.
Some scares if you want them. And other than that, we are very much looking forward to the big old Big Fat Avengers, which is coming out on the 26th of April, and Deadpool 2, but that's not until the 16th of May. So, hold your horses. But they have just released a new trailer.
They have.
I found very amusing. Looking even further into the future, in June, it's Ocean's 8, which is the all-female cast.
Yeah.
There's the new Jurassic Park World.
One of them.
Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which is also June. And then, really exciting, I think, The Incredibles 2.
Yes.
In July.
How long have we been waiting for that?
I don't know, Matt.
So many years.
Is it as long as we've been waiting for Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again? Because that's coming out in July as well.
They've found a solution to the problem of doing a sequel to a film where all of the people in it, like significant people in it, got criticised for not being able to sing very well. Let's just do it where they're all younger and recast everybody in it.
With people that can sing.
Yeah.
And there's also, in August, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, more supers.
I'm just really excited because I love me some delicious Paul, what's his face?
Rudd.
Yeah, thanks.
The Rudd.
The Rudd. Yep, I could say something really horribly dirty, but I won't. great. Okay, well, now we've given you a little taste of what's coming up in the cinematic future. In the theatre future, for all of you listeners out there, I can absolutely with certainty say it's Frankie Fightwell. So if you want to book tickets, they are available at a fantastically discounted rate until the 1st of April. So you can book via blackshoreonline.com. It's the easiest place to go. I mean, it's on lots of places, but go to blackshoreonline.com, click through to book your tickets.
That is your route of least resistance.
Exactly. And if you do follow us on social media, we will be just constantly, every day, at least, putting one link up. So there you go. Big plans.
You can't avoid it.
No.
You might
so
as
you
well.
Might as well just book it and come. It's going to be great. I'm very excited. Yes.
Don't bring your own melon.
Oh,
because we can't guarantee its safety.
No, Andy will just still sniff it out. He's like a pig with a truffle. Lovely. Okay, well, we will be back next time. Matt will be reviewing something and we will be chatting at you. It will be a delight.
It's a mystery.
It's a mystery. In the meantime, enjoy yourselves. Indulge in some art. Put your feet up. Why not? Watch Annihilation. It's on Netflix.
Have fun.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Blackshore Art Hour.
Follow us on Twitter at Blackshore Update. Watch us on the Instagrams at Blackshore Theatre.
Like us on the Facebook at Blackshore Online.
And find all the things at blackshoreonline.com.